Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, I have a very special returning guest, and it's Dr. Bruce Olive Solheim, and we'll be talking about his newest book, Timeless Deja Vu, A Paranormal Personal History. Bruce's first timeless book offered readers an entertaining chronological survey of his remarkable paranormal adventures. Timeless Deja Vu goes further and deeper with 31 more stories of the paranormal and supernatural, where you will experience the impact of his mediumship and encounters with spirits of all kinds, learn about theoretical framework for understanding these phenomena, and even discover how aliens and ghosts have something in common. Bruce holds a doctoral degree and is a professor and former Fulbright scholar. In addition to his new book, Dr. Solheim also teaches a popular paranormal personal history course at Citrus College in Glendora, California. For more information, you can visit his website, which is BruceOlivSolheim.com, and that's BruceOlivSolheim.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Bruce to the show. Good day, sir.
Hello, Robert. It's great to be back with you.
Thank you. Time flies. I was going to say that this is like deja vu, isn't it?
It is.
But
yeah.
That would be a little appropriate. All over again, yes. Well, I'm really looking forward to speaking with you. We had fun when I last spoke with you in September last year, and I'm looking forward to talking about these more adventures that you have.
Yeah, sure.
So let's start. First of all, I understand that this book was inspired by Theodora. So would you mind sharing with the listeners who Theodora is and how you were inspired by her?
Yeah. Theodora, I have two spirit guides, what I would call spirit guides. Theodora, maybe some people would call her a guardian angel, but she's been with me. Actually, both of my spirit guides have been with me since I was born, and they've been looking out for me, and they help me as I navigate the world of the spirit world and the paranormal. And I've just recently really learned how to identify them, you know, in the last 3 years or so. And you know, kind of what we talked about last time, being able to turn this on and turn it off. And they help me do that, and they help me protect myself when I'm contacting this, you know, in folks in the spirit world. And and it's really necessary for people to have that kind of protection, because I often say, you know, don't fool around with things you don't really understand. And for most of my life, I had all these experiences. They were all, you know, random, very frequent, but random. I was like walking around with a giant radar dish over my head or something. And finally I figured it out. And Theodora helps me do that. She keeps me safe and helps me make the connections to the folks that I need to be talking to, not the ones I don't need to be talking to.
That's good. Yeah.
Kind of like a bouncer.
Make sure you have good context.
Yeah. She's kind of like a bouncer. Her and my other spirit guide is named Ozzy. He's kind of the strong, silent type. Theodora is kind of an angelic type, but they're both kind of bouncers. I guess you can look at it that way.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's great. You know, it's interesting. You know, a lot of the followers of the show probably have a belief in guardian angels, you know, and, you know, it's, I think one of the easiest ways that people kind of identify with those is whenever there seems to be an experience in their lives where maybe those angels kind of lend a helping hand, you know, that becomes experiential thing that gives their presence known, makes their presence known.
Yeah, very much so. I believe that, and I know that to be true. I believe it, and I know it, having experienced it. You know?
Yeah. Now, and it was interesting. I read about Theodora and Teddy, and that there was a you had a little bit of a teddy bear.
Yes.
That was went missing
physical,
and came back and. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the physical representation of Theodora, and I never knew it. I just knew that I always had to have that teddy bear with me, which, you know, a lot of young children do, but I had no idea that Theodora was representing her. So, I guess I didn't think of my teddy bear as a boy or a girl. I just, you know, knew her as Teddy, but then I realized, well, Teddy's really Theodora. So, I lost her. It was actually in the 80s, she kind of got thrown out with the trash, unfortunately, which is very heartbreaking. Even though I was an adult at the time, it was very heartbreaking. And then, she reappeared on eBay. It looks a lot. I don't think it's probably the exact same Theodora, but certainly looks exactly like her. I'm looking at her right now. She's right behind me on my bookshelf, looking over my shoulder, as she always does. And she's back there. And I found her on eBay. It was just an old teddy bear. It looks exactly like, you know, the same vintage, you know, 1958. I got it when I was born. So, yeah, that was pretty remarkable. So. I'm glad she's here.
Yeah,
she's
kind
here
of
with
fun.
Us.
That's good.
Yeah.
Physically and in spirit, I'm sure. So
yeah,
I have no
exactly.
doubt about that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now, how does Timeless Deja Vu differ from your first Timeless book?
Yeah, it's there were some stories that, you know, the first book, I was kind of testing the waters, to tell you the truth. I wasn't sure what the reaction would be from my colleagues, from my students, you know, from readers. I thought, you know, here's this, Fulbright scholar, guy's a life, you know, academic life for over 20 years. And now all of a sudden he's writing, you know, ghost stories. What happened? So I got such a good reaction, and people came up to me and wanted to tell me their stories. I was like a safe person that they could talk to, and the class happened and all that. So then I figured, okay, I'm going to go a little bit further. Some of the stories, which were maybe a little bit farther out there, I put in the second book, took a bigger chance, and also some, you know, kind of painful stuff, you know, very personal, painful stuff mm-hmm. that I included in there that I thought was really important for readers, because I really feel like writers are at their best when they're at their most vulnerable. And that's when the reader says, I get it. This person is sticking their neck out, and I appreciate that. So I think that's what I wanted to do with this book after I tested the waters. You know, I didn't get fired from my teaching job, so that was good. And so I thought, okay, I'll go a little bit further. And so far the reception's been pretty good. And there's similar stories. A lot of it's updated stuff, you know, stuff that's been happening since the first book came out too. So, you know, not only stories that were held back the first time, but things that have been ongoing. Cause this is an ongoing thing. I mean, it just keeps going on and on. And, so that there's enough already for a third book, which I'm actually working on. So it's going to be a trilogy. Timeless Trinity will be the book that comes out next year. I'll have enough by then. So it'll be the most spiritual of the three. Yeah, I kind of tie it all together in the third one. So
great.
I'll be back. I'd like
to
be back next year.
I've got an opening for you already. So
yeah,
whenever that will be.
Yeah, you can't get rid of me.
that's what my dad used to say
about my parents were Norwegians, and my dad always said, you know, once you make friends with a Norwegian, you can never get rid of them.
Well, that's good. Well, you know, I like friendly Norwegians, so I'm really happy to have you there. So,
thank you.
Okay, so now Deja Vu. Mm-hmm. Can you know there are several differing ideas about what déjà vu is. So would you mind kind of sharing with us your view of maybe just some of the differing views are and what your current view is?
Yeah, there's, you know, there are the scientific view is really that it's just a trick of the mind that it's kind of memory packing. So, you know, that there's that idea that that people, you know, remember things and kind of a, so it causes a distortion where you think that you're that you're seeing something happen again, but it's really just a trick of your mind, kind of testing your memory. It's almost like a system test. That's what some scientists believe. I have a different feeling based on my own experience and also based on what my spirit friends tell me. And I always have to give a shout out to my friend Gene, who passed away and really inspired, besides Theodora, Gene inspired the first book and is still with me. And he's around right now, too. I'm sure he's listening in. He speaks to me from the spirit world, and he always reminds me that this is a partnership, you know. But he was the one who first told me that that really, you know, where he is in the spirit world since he's passed on is that there is no future, there's no past, there's only the present. So this idea that, and I think Einstein talked about it too, that it's all the same. It's really all the same, the past, the present, and the future. So deja vu is just glimpsing what's already there. I kind of look at it like, if you can imagine, I think I draw or have it drawn in there by my Gary Dumm, the fabulous illustrator who illustrated the book, kind of like a wave, you know, like a trough of a wave, and kind of like the crest of the wave goes past the trough. And so the trough area, which kind of doubles back, is the deja vu. So you're actually experiencing the future as it comes. And it looks, and so you're seeing it again. I mean, it's like you're experiencing it again. So that's the way I look at it. It's kind of like time is like a wave. And I think that's been, I think even particle physicists talk about that, time as a wave, you know. And really, when you break it down, all of us are waves, you know. We're waves of energy and matter. And it's just that we construct it in such a way that we look like we do, like our surroundings look solid and everything. But if you talk to, you know, people that study subatomic particles, they'll say, well, everything's moving. It's all like a big soup, you know, that we're all connected, you know, but we don't see it that way necessarily. We see it as distinct things. Anyway, that's the best way I can describe it, is that I think it's pretty natural, actually. And, you know, the research has shown that people tend to have more deja vu when they're younger and less so when they grow older. And I'm not exactly sure why, but I've experienced that myself. I still have deja vu, but not as frequently or as powerfully as I did when I was younger.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I find it, you know, whenever I've had those experiences, I mean, it gives you pause. You know, it's so out of the ordinary. It's such an unusual experience that you know, you kind of have to stop and think, and then, you know, again, you question, you know, where did this come from? You know, what am I, you know, am I? And then, you know, then there's the idea, I think, too, of the idea of parallel universes, you know, that maybe, you know, the Robert in, you know, universe 1005, you know, did the same thing, and he's kind of experiencing it, you know, what he did.
Right. I think it goes back to this idea that, you know, not only that time is, it's all together, you know, past, present, future, everything, but also that, you know, that we are waves. And I think it, you know, when you think about the quantum realm, you know, quantum physics, you know, the subatomic realm, the spirit realm, and really the realm in which I think aliens exist and enter our, you know, in and out of our dimension. I think it's all the same thing. That's really what I've come to believe. And it's been confirmed by my spirit guides too, that it's really the same thing. And then I get to a certain point and they kind of hesitate and say, okay, you need to learn a little bit more before we give you any more information. So they don't want to blow my mind by giving me too much of a download. You know, because it's a lot to take in. It really is when you think about it.
Yeah, they're gentle with you. That's great. You know, but it reminds me. I had a quantum physicist, Dr. Goswami, on, and you know, when I read about the idea of, you know, light being a wave until you give it attention, then it's particle. You know, you have that wave particle idea. I mean, the idea of, you know, to me that was like the ultimate idea of how manifestation happens, you know, that it's you have those possibilities out there, and then you give it attention, and it becomes real. And,
yeah.
You know, it sounds very much like this is right in line with that.
Yeah. Oh, it, yeah. It all makes sense when you look at the big picture, and then, but it's still, it's so, you know, alien and not, you know, just not
mm-hmm.
pun intended or anything, but this, it's so alien to the way we're really taught reality is supposed to be that. But then if you talk to like mystics and people, you know, of ancient traditions and it, oh yeah, that's the way it is. You know, they don't have any qualms about it at all. But modern people, we've kind of forgotten these other, you know, dimensions to our life that are very important and help us really, you know, kind of put aside a lot of the fear that we have. I always, in the first book and this book too, I talk about the fear of death and how that it paralyzes people and makes them so afraid they can't really live and enjoy their lives as much as they should. And so having that big picture, I think, helps all of us, really.
Yeah, very much. You know, and you know, the idea of time and timeless,
mm-hmm.
The title of your book, you know, the idea that, you know, the past, present, and future are all simultaneous, you know,
yep.
for people who, you know, I mean, it's a really hard idea since we're living in a timeline, you know, it's kind of hard to wrap around, to go beyond that timeline. And but also, you know, if you do get into that thought idea, then it also gives credence to the importance of the present and what you're doing in
yes.
the present and how it not only affects your future, but it can also affect your past.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this idea that it all exists together. You know, a lot of people say you should live in the moment and everything. And then, well, the moment just passed just a second ago, you know, what am I supposed to do? And I think, if people really, if they can slow down just a little bit and, you know, through meditation or any kind of spiritual things that they have, their religion, whatever it is, and slow down and really understand what we're here for, then I think it would help them and alleviate a lot of the stress that people have, a lot of the anxiety, because we're a very anxiety-ridden society. And I think it's not just here in this country, but other countries too. Modern society is so anxiety-ridden. And I think slowing down and realizing, you know, how this kind of works and is I think would be very helpful, would be very healthy for them.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm visiting a friend tomorrow in Charleston, South Carolina, who
mm-hmm.
Just yesterday told me that, you know, she is, you know, looking at selling her business because she is just going and finds it very difficult to slow down in,
right.
you know, with that business. I mean, being in that realm, so much so that she really wants to sell the business just so she can create an environment for her where, you know, taking life a little bit slower and more meaningful would be what she desires now.
Yeah, kind of like a more contemplative lifestyle.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
It just,
now she's saying it's because it's old age, but I think at any age that's a good thing to do.
Yeah, for whatever, you know, whatever the reason. You know, I had
an
experience. A friend of mine came to me and said, you know, that he's a dean at the college, and a colleague, one of his professors died recently, unfortunately, and she wasn't very old. She was in her 50s. And he asked me to contact her, and this is what people do because of my mediumship. I don't take money. I've never taken money for a mediumship. I just do it for friends and family members and people who ask me. And he asked me to contact her, which I did. And I got some really good information from her. She was very forthcoming in the spirit world. And one thing she said to me that stuck with me, she said it for my benefit as well as his, was that the real purpose of our existence in this dimension, in this earth, you know, in this where we are right now,
mm-hmm.
is to help alleviate the suffering of other people. That's it, to help alleviate the suffering in this world. Because a lot of people say, well, you know, people who have had near-death experiences, they go, they don't want to come back because it's so beautiful and it's so wonderful and there's no pain and there's no suffering. But then they oftentimes they have to come back because they have a mission. And I think that mission is what all of us have, is to do what little bit we can every day to help alleviate the suffering of all the suffering in this world as best we can, mm-hmm. even if it's just a little bit every day. So that's
wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's, when you think about that, that's, and I've, talked to, several people who have, been at death's door, and mm-hmm. Have come back. And, I mean, it's usually such a profound experience that, their life mm-hmm. Changes dramatically. I mean, their worldview or universal view shifts, mm-hmm. But also it seems that that idea of having a mission, and I know that sometimes it's hard for some people to who feel that maybe they're here for a purpose, but sometimes just can't identify what that purpose is. But if what she said, this environment here is meant to ease suffering and be healing, then mm-hmm. I think then the next time someone asks me, or comes to me and says, I don't know what my purpose is, I'm going to kind of, ask them, if that is something that they're doing, or if there's listeners out there who are wondering for themselves, what my purpose is, maybe they can start looking around them, and seeing, in their life, are there people who they can help?
I think no matter what job we have or capacity we have, we can do that. Whatever we're doing in this life, we can take a moment to make those things better. It reminds me of a quote by Theodore Roosevelt, President Theodore Roosevelt. He said, you always need to do what you can with what you have and where you are. He said it, do what you can, where you are, with what you have. So you don't have to be in some, high and mighty position to help people. All of us are in a position to help people every day or help other living things or mm-hmm. our environment or where, it's the whole idea. And I think that, so everybody does have a purpose. We have special, talents that end up, like yourself doing this wonderful show. You help people all the time. This type of show is what people hunger for, and I write my books and I teach my classes, and other people are fixing people's pipes and being nice to them and alleviating their suffering that they're having from bad pipes in their house, and just helping them. We're all helping in some way, that's the thing, with our skills that we have, where we are with what we got.
Yeah. It's funny. I had that experience with someone who had to fix my plumbing recently, speaking of pipes
and that can be very upsetting.
It can be. It was.
Yeah.
But also, there's a funny thing. There's a gentleman who cuts our lawn, and he's just a really nice guy. And I had to have our gutter fixed, and it was like, it was a simple thing to do, but I didn't have a ladder, and So anyway, I asked him, if he wouldn't mind doing that, And when he was all done, I had to leave, but I had left, the check to pay him, but also included a little bit extra for that. It was mm-hmm. here's $5 for the ladder rental and, $10 for fixing the gutter. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, you would have think that I, gave him a bar of gold, he called up and he was like, no one has ever done that before. And he just laughed. He thought that was the greatest thing, he's one of those kind of people that, thinks that, just cutting the lawn is, mundane, but, mm-hmm. but doesn't realize the impact that that has. And I think, people who have jobs that they think maybe don't make a difference, they can maybe just look twice at that and think that, there is a purpose served.
Yeah. It reminds me of that story. I can't remember exactly how, something about the space program and President Kennedy, and there was some like a janitor at you know, that's working somewhere, and you know, they said, "What are you doing?" And he was like mopping the floor, and he said, "Well, I'm helping put a man on the moon." You know, everybody's doing their part. You know, you got to have a clean place to work. Yeah, and we, you know, I'm very nice to the custodians at our campus because they, you know, they do such a great job, and we don't ever see them, you know, because they come in at like 9 p.m. and leave by 5 a.m. So,
right.
Or whatever their hours are.
Yeah.
So
you know, and people like that who most often are just not seen or heard, you know, who kind of just mm-hmm. are there. And, you know, I have found often that if I, you know, pay attention, you know, to who they are, give them the little thanks of gratitude and, you know, recognize them for what they do. Again, it's one of those things where, you know, they think that, oh my God, what just happened, you know, and it's like, you know, and I think that if people were to do that more often, you know, there would be a wonderful ripple effect, you know, that you know, kind of brighten up the environment, you know, our living environment.
Oh yeah. Cause I encourage my students to do that, you know, while they're on their journey of discovery, just wake up every morning with the mission to do good, you know, cause it's really good people doing good things that make good, you know, that make the world a better place. And if everybody did that, this world would be cleaned up in a hurry. I think if everybody contributed
Absolutely.
Just a little bit every day. Yeah,
I agree. Now, your new book, Timeless Deja Vu, chronicles 31 paranormal experiences that you've had over a 40-year period. How have your experiences changed over that period, or has there been a change in how you experience the paranormal?
Yeah, I still have very powerful experiences. But now I've learned to somewhat, and I hate to use the word control, but I'll say the word manage. How's that? That sounds better. I can manage it better because, like I said before, I had like this gigantic radar dish on top of my head, and I didn't know what I was bringing in, good stuff, bad stuff, whatever. It was just coming in all the time. So now I've learned when to put the radar dish up with protection of Theodora and Ozzy. And when to turn it off, like turning off a radio, although we don't want people to do that right now. But, you know, the idea is that we want to, I have some ability to manage it. And so the experiences are, you know, pretty wide. You know, there's broad experiences like I'll just say one thing. And they always surprise me. I have to say that I never like, oh, there's another, you know, ghost, or there's another spirit or whatever. It's always. Very, it's surprising to me. Like, I don't know if you know. The artist of my book, who does the illustrations, Gary Dumm, he worked on American Splendor with Harvey Pekar, who's a Cleveland guy, Cleveland, Ohio guy, and then it was made into a film with Paul Giamatti, and a really cool film, won a lot of awards. But anyway, I'm a big admirer of Harvey Pekar, and he kind of inspired me to do a lot of the stuff I'm doing with the illustrations. And I'm even doing a comic book. That's one of my latest projects I'm working on too, kind of a side project. But anyway, I was doing my spirit walk one day, and along comes this, and this was, when was this? This was probably a year, maybe 2 years ago. And I was, it was 2 years ago. And I was just walking and doing my, you know, trying to make my connection. And all of a sudden, this anachronistic looking man comes by on a bicycle, on this old kind of bicycle, like from the 60s or something. And he wasn't like all the bikers around here are all the, you know, they wear those skin tight spandex outfits with the the fancy, you know, Speedo bikes that look like they're going 100 miles an hour standing still. But this guy was wearing he was just wearing regular street clothes, you know, and he was a guy in his 60s, you know, bald. And he looked exactly like Harvey Pekar. Well, the thing is, this happened 2 years ago. Harvey Pekar died in 2010. And I did a double take. I looked at him, and then I looked back, and I said, "What? Who?" And I looked at him, and he didn't acknowledge me at all, which happens sometimes. Some spirits are just like a video or something, you know, you can't interact with them.
Mm-hmm.
And he just rode by. And then I think I looked down at my phone to do something. I don't know if I was going to take a picture or what it was. I looked up and he was gone. And it
wow.
always, it's so remarkable. And I guess it's not surprising. I told my friend Gary, who does all these illustrations, I told him, and he said, well, that doesn't surprise him that, you know, as connected as we are, you know, now together, it's really Harvey beyond the grave who brought me and Gary together, because I was looking at an old issue of American Splendor, and I saw Gary's artwork in there, and I go, I connect with this guy. I'm going to contact him. So I emailed him, and Gary said, yeah, I want to work with you. And so it was a pretty remarkable thing. So, yeah, so that's just one of the kind of cool things that can happen. And when you open yourself up, this kind of, you know, people can just ride in on a bike and ride out, and you just, you know, you don't know when that's going to happen. And he was obviously, Ozzy and Theodora didn't have to protect me from Harvey, because he was, you know, he's a good guy. So he just rode through.
Friendly.
Yeah, he was friendly. A friendly ghost. Like Casper.
Exactly. Well, you know, and I think, you know, the idea of it being a surprise, to me, you know, the idea that we're not, like you say, your mind is open, you know, you don't have any thoughts, you know, targeted thoughts going on. I mean, it's one of those things where you're kind of ripe for an experience, you know, whatever.
Yeah. You're open to it.
So,
and then, mm-hmm. you know, but like my friend Gene always says, you know, he tells me that, experiencing is believing, and believing is experiencing. So once you've had experiences and you believe, oh my gosh, this is real stuff, it opens you up to new experiences, you know, new ones, and they just keep coming. And just when you think, oh, I've seen it all, you know, something new comes along you've never thought about. So it's really a cool adventure. It really is. And I know that I'm protected, so I'm not worried about that. Like before, things would, you know, scary things would happen. I wouldn't know what I'm supposed to do, but I know what to do now. So that's helpful.
Yeah.
So I can be less fearful, although you still have to be cautious, because there are some entities in the spirit world that are, you know, deceivers, you know, that can, you know, they'll go, I'm a little girl and I'm just lost, you know, or whatever. Okay. Really? Okay. Well, here, answer a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So, but usually I don't have that, because Theodore and Ozzy take care of me. So.
Yeah. You know, I've often thought that, you know, my guides are well aware, you know, of what I can
mm-hmm.
handle and what I can't. I mean, they know not to have anybody try to manifest in front of me, you know, because
right.
I'd be joining them there, you know. And, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, but when it comes to, you know, auditory kinds of experiences, or even, you know, just, I mean, I'll get the, you know, the tingling chakra, crown chakra, when
mm-hmm.
when something, you know, catches my attention, you know, I mean, it's,
yeah,
they know that that's one way to get my attention, to pay attention, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll just give you a little nudge. Yeah.
Exactly.
I had a friend of mine who said, kind of along those lines, a friend of mine, Dr. Simeon Hine, he does he works out of Boulder, Colorado. He does remote viewing and stuff like that. He's a real cool guy. I met him at a conference not long ago. Anyway, he said something interesting. He said, we're as psychic as we need to be. I thought that was pretty interesting thought, you know. We're as psychic as we need to be. So we're not more psychic than we can handle, you know. We're as psychic as we need to be. Because a lot of people say, oh, I want to be totally clairvoyant and know the future and hear people's thoughts and all this. Oh, really? I don't think you'll make it, you know, if you have all that stuff, you know.
Well, you know, I mean, and it kind of goes back to the, you know, the Christian, you know, idea of, you know, God only gives you what you can handle, you know, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
You know, so you know, there, and and I'm sure everybody's guides are just very attuned as to, you know, what is appropriate and what isn't. And so we're about halfway through the show, Bruce. I want to take a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners, if they want to call in with any questions, they can call in to 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, they can go ahead and post questions. And then when we come back, I want to go ahead and kind of talk about some of the stories, just, you know, high level, some of the stories that you cover in this book, okay?
Yeah, okay. Excellent.
Great. Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Dr. Bruce Olive Solheim, and we're talking about his newest book, Timeless Deja Vu, A Paranormal Personal History. Again, you can find out more about this book, his first timeless book, as well as his many other books, by visiting his website, which is www.bruceolavesolheim.com, and it's bruceolavesolheim.com. And with that, I'd like to say, okay, we're back, Bruce.
And here we are. Okay, I'm here.
And here we are. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So
I'm enjoying myself.
Let's talk a little. Good. Me too. I said, I, you know, when your publicist contacted me and said, you know, Bruce has another book, it's like, ah, yes. This
yes.
is going to be fun. I mentioned in the introduction that you suggest that aliens and ghosts have something in common. So can you share with us maybe what that is? And, you know, for those out there who think aliens aren't real, how does what you say to that?
Well, I said earlier that and what I have come to believe, and my spirit guides have confirmed this, is that the same realm that what scientists would call the quantum realm, what operates very differently than our visible universe that we experience in the macro world, so in this micro or subatomic world, the quantum world, that is where pretty remarkable things happen. Like we talked earlier about the light wave dichotomy and this idea that time can actually go backwards or, you know, exist all at the same time. All that stuff can happen at the micro, at the subatomic world. Well, that I think is really what the spirit world is, because that's what Gene and the other spirit guides have told me, that there is, it's all just together, you know, it's all the same thing. And there's, And I think aliens operate in that realm too. I think that's how they can pop in and out the way they do, you know. And you hear, I have friends of mine who have been abducted, and they tell me that what can happen is that they, you know, pass through walls. They can transport them in these, you know, remarkable ways. It sounds a lot like what ghosts do and spirits do, and I think it's very much the same kind of thing. And you know, when I have my psychic connection through mediumship with those that have passed on, I also have a connection to a and an alien entity too. I didn't know he was at first, which was interesting because he just identified himself as the progenitor. And that's one of the stories. That is in Deja Vu. So this is how I'm going a little bit further than the first book. I'm sticking my neck out a little bit more. But in 1997, I contacted this guy. And at that time, it was all – this happened randomly, right? I have no management of this yet. Mm-hmm. And in 1997, this person, this entity, contacted me and when I was in a meditative state and told me he was the progenitor. And I said, well, what does that mean? I think I know what progenitor means, but what do you mean? And he talked about that he was the original mystic or the original person or the original – person that was around at the beginning of humankind, you know. So in other words, an ancient mystic. That's what I thought he was, an ancient mystic. And he told me all kinds of interesting things, like, you know, this idea of interdimensionality, that, you know, the a black hole explodes into another dimension as a quasar, you know, all this kind of stuff. And he's telling me stuff that I really didn't understand that well, but I wrote it all down and I put it in that story. But what's interesting is that connection I found out when I started to have more management of this, the spirit world, I specifically asked to talk to the progenitor. I said, progenitor, I'd like to speak to you and, you know, Ozzy and Theodora, can you help me make that connection? Cause sometimes they operate kind of like operators, old fashioned operators. Okay. I'll put you right through. You know? Uh-huh. So they can do that too. They can protect you. They can, you know, act that way and give me advice too. But in this case, they put me through to the progenitor, and I had a discussion with him, and I said, well, who are you really? What is your – asked what his name was, and he said his name was Anzar, A-N-Z-A-R. So I have a story in there called Anzar's Answers, where I talk to him, and I get answers from him about who he is and what he represents. And that's when I found out that, yes, he was a original mystic, but he was one of the original contacts from another world, another – you know, not this world, but another world, an alien, in other words, who had contacted early man, and he has been around since then. So he is communicating to me through the spirit world. So that is, and then I asked him specifically, does this explain why, you know, some people see the aliens and have contact with them and other people don't? And, you know, do you operate in that same realm as the spirits I speak to, because that's how I'm speaking to him. And he said, yes, that's how it works. And so he's given me some pretty good advice. And it's, I share that in the last story of the book, Anzar's Answers. But it's an update on an earlier story in the book, which was when I first was introduced to him, but I didn't know who he was exactly yet. I hadn't gotten that information. And once again, I think, like you said, you know, God doesn't give us more than we can handle. If he would have told me in 1997 that he was an alien, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I'd probably be locked up somewhere. Right. Who knows what would, you know, but so the time has come. I've now able to understand it better and deal with it. You know, I had a lot of stuff I had to learn between 1997 and now. So, so I think that's what I mean by that. And I share these stories with my friend who was abducted. He and a few other people are very interested. Okay, what's Anzar saying now? You know, so I'll connect with Anzar and he'll tell me some things, and he doesn't tell me, you know, specific dates and stuff like that. But he does tell me stuff, and I, you know, like in general, you know, be prepared, because I think it's already started this kind of drip by drip reveal of what's going on. I don't know if you've noticed that the Air Force put out, or the Navy put out, this statement that they have this protocol for their pilots now for identifying UFOs and reporting them. And there was the To the Stars Academy that came out a couple years ago with that guy that was in Blink 182, I think Tom DeLong or whatever his name is. And he's got some former government people like Hector Elizondo, who was the head of the pretty much the secret UFO program that the government had going on. And he's a spokesperson for them. So all this stuff is kind of coming out, but it's coming out in not like one big splashy headline like aliens are real. You know, it's right. More like here's something we think there's. Like Elizondo would say stuff like Well, there's UFOs that they can't be in our inventory, so we think we're not alone. But it doesn't like out and out say, hey, they've been visiting us for, hundreds or thousands
right.
of years or whatever. But so you have to kind of piece it all together. So it's all pretty exciting, and it seems to make sense to me now that I see it. But had I been told that in 1997, I wouldn't have been prepared to listen to that. And even now, I'm really sticking my neck out a little bit. I mean, it's interesting. Some people will say, oh, yeah, I can buy that you might see a ghost or something, but talk to an alien? I don't know about that. So it's like one step beyond. Or I guess the late Jim Mars would have said, you've reached people's boggle point. They get to a certain point. They go, okay, that's it. Don't tell me anymore. I don't want to hear it. So they can only go far.
Yeah.
And then they have to get off the roller coaster.
Yeah, and I think, as a matter of fact, I think even, wasn't there, I think, a Vatican statement, something to the effect of, an acknowledgement of their a possibility of aliens.
Yeah.
And I can't remember exactly what it was. So, to me, it seemed, that, the idea of aliens mm-hmm. would really wreak havoc with religion. So, I mean, it seems that, even now religion is tiptoeing to the effect that, that they could exist and
mm-hmm.
that not only could they exist, but also that it won't, destroy our belief system. That we can, you can believe in God and this particular religion as well as, aliens. They can coexist. God created.
Yeah.
Aliens.
Well, I think that's very true. There's not a conflict in my mind. And Anzar has never told me that, that he is God or something like that, or something ridiculous like that. They're always acknowledging how there is this higher power, whether you call it God or whatever. And I call him God.
Right.
That's my own relationship, but kind of an interesting sidelight here is I met this guy. He's a professor of biological anthropology or something like a very technical kind of guy, and he teaches at Montana Tech in Butte, Montana, which strangely enough, that's where I went to school for a while when I thought I was going to be an engineer. But anyway, his name is Dr. Michael Masters, and he just came out with a book called "Identified Flying Objects." And he has, and you might want to think about this guy, maybe to talk to him one of these days. His book contends that the aliens and the UFOs are really humans from the distant future, from the far away future, coming back. They've invented some kind of time machine. And that seems pretty, wild at first, but then his book is, it's pretty academic. I'm not going to say it's an easy read if people are going to go check it out, but it's fascinating. And this idea, and I actually asked Anzar about that. I got so interested and I read the book and everything. And Anzar said, well, yeah, he's partially right. And I said, well, what do you mean by partially right? And he said, well, yeah, there are humans that in the future which is good news for us, because that means we last pretty long.
We have a future.
So there's some good news. Yeah.
There is.
But there's others who are not. There's others who are not from this planet too. So it's not just one. So, and I think it's very true with this, we're all kind of reaching around in the dark and trying to get these puzzle pieces and put it together. And I think if you take all these different ideas and kind of put it together, it starts to form a whole, and everybody has a contribution to make to understanding where we are in the universe. And going back to your point, it doesn't discount the idea of God. Not at all. Not in my mind. There's people who say, oh, if you see ghosts and stuff, that's, it's all demonic. And I said, well, no, my friend Gene was a very nice, and he's a very nice person in life. He's still a very nice person, very good person. There's nothing demonic about him at all. So I think maybe for some people, it just, maybe they're afraid, but really, if you look at all religions have some kind of, mystical element to it. I mean, what is prayer but meditation and speaking to God? I mean, that is that is if you technically you could identify it as a paranormal activity, right? I mean, in a way, although it's not
exactly
thought of that way, and it's I pray all the time. I mean, I think it's great, and it's great that people do it. So, but it, yeah. And the other thing was this, the drip by drip by drip. Jim Mars, the late Jim Mars, he said that there was metering going. He called it metering. So just, you know, like a meter, you know, not letting it all come out at once. And whether it's by the government or by those in charge or whatever, or, you know, the higher power or whatever, there is metering going on. Because I think there would be, I'm not going to say there'd be panic, but there would be a lot of people who would be blown away, and they would need a little help to understand this. And I think a lot of folks like yourself who are open to this and have had experiences and have shows where you're open to talking about this, that helps kind of prepare people for what's to come. And I think that's what we're all doing. We're all doing our part to help people and help them not be, you know, afraid, but to be cautious, you know. And yeah, you know, I think it's always good to be cautious.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and it's interesting. A friend of mine is a clairvoyant and does, you know, some really good readings, and lately has been getting clients who are very religious, you know, and were only referred to him because of, you know, friends, you know, who have had experiences. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, the information he provides is so unique to them that they recognize that it's, you know, legitimate, but it comes across from him in such a gentle, non-judgmental way that, you know, the fears that they had. I mean, I met one of them afterwards, and she just, oh, I was so afraid when he was coming over here. I was really scared to death, you know. You know, but so-and-so said, you know, and then afterwards I was like, oh, I'm so glad I did that. You know, it really changed my view of things, you know. And so, I mean, I think that's kind of like that metering effect. You know, you have that little bit of entry into, you know, something that they recognize is legitimate. And, you know, the fact that it's non-judgmental, you know, and any of the thing that goes on, you know, there isn't that fire and brimstone kind of, you know, essence to it. That there's safety in being able to, you know, hear, you know, that kind of perspective. So, you know, if they feel, if they feel safe and there's no judgment, then it, I think, I mean, that's kind of like, you know, when it, you know, the final reveal or the next reveal, you know, happens, that it's going to be, people are like, oh yeah, okay. So you kind of expected it. And, what's next, you know?
I think that's what's going on.
Yeah. Now, another one of your stories, I find this interesting, that you introduced people to your Nazi aunt.
Yes.
That had to have been a trip.
it was a very traumatic experience. And this is one of the more painful stories. And, you know, I have no problem telling the story, obviously, but I wrote it. But, you know, and I know your show is kind of a family show, so I'll tone it down a little bit. But my aunt was a true Nazi. She was during World War II. She was my dad's youngest sister. She joined the Gestapo, and she her specialty was to find members of the underground in Norway. And her work led to the death of 9 brave young men who were in the resistance. And so she would, you know, that she did terrible things. But she was a true believer. You know, she really was a true believer. Well, she was sentenced to death for war crimes after the war. But what saved her was that my dad's older brother, her older brother too, he was a war hero. He was a convoy commander and was stationed in England and took convoys across the Atlantic. And he was sunk twice by U-boats. And he won like the equivalent of the Medal of Honor in Norway. And all these, you know, medals and stuff. And he used his prestige and his, you know, notoriety and his reputation and all of his money to get her sentence commuted to life, because he made the case that she was young and impressionable. And, you know, she had lost her German officer boyfriend on the Eastern Front and all this other stuff. And he had all these extenuating circumstances. But anyway, so she got a life sentence. And then after 9 years, she was so mentally ill that she was released. And I don't think she was mentally ill. I think she was crazy like a fox. You know, I think that's, you know, she was a very smart lady and was able to get her way out. And she was a very successful business lady after that. But where it comes into my view here is that I had, you know, I saw her a couple of times when I was growing up. But this particular story is about one time when I was about 14, I think, 14 years old. And she came to visit at Christmas time. And in the middle of the night, I saw her in my room. Well, my aunt shouldn't have been in my room in the middle of the night. So you can imagine she was not there for good purposes. And I was a very naive person. So, but not only was she there, but I had this idea that there were these little people around her, you know? So that's what I write about, is this experience, how I think these were like alien creatures that were with her and how she was connected to them. I wasn't quite sure, but I knew that I don't have detailed memories of what happened, but I just knew it wasn't right. And I kind of have a memory block about it, you know, because maybe I don't want to remember. It was so traumatic. But anyway, that's what that story is about. And what's interesting is that in the third book, I've gone through some what they call, hypnotic regression, right? About certain blockages in my memory. And that's one of them that I did. And I found out a lot more. And it was a lot more than just, her impropriety that evening. There was more to it than that. And it was quite frightening. And that's why I blocked it. So that's going to be in my third book. But anyway, it's kind of a preview of that. But that's what that story is about. I tried to keep it, clean for a family show. So, but that's, it was a very traumatic experience that shouldn't have happened to a young boy. So I'll just put it that way. And she was, not very many people have Nazi aunts, but I had one. So.
Wow, boy.
I think evil attracts evil. Now, that's what I think. You know, that's what I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah. I am sure. There's comfort. Evil takes comfort in that. Well, boy, I can't wait for Trinity to come out.
I gotta hype that too, and it's a year away. Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well, that's good. I truly am interested in that. So anyway, we're running out of time, but we didn't have time to get to spirit animals, Elvis and John Wayne, and all kinds of things that people can buy the book and find out about all of those.
It's all in there.
And it's all in there. So, I'm really delighted to speak with you today. And also, I'd like to know about your graphic novel. I think we're connected on Facebook, so I hope to be able to find out more about that too when that comes into an existence.
Yeah, it'll be this year, and it'll be it's going to be all ages comic book. It'll be a comic book.
Great.
And it'll be regular comic book size for all ages, and it deals with an alien who's a hybrid. And he comes to Earth, and he has all kinds of adventures that relate to different problems on Earth. So it's kind of a helpful thing for people to see an alien that's very helpful rather than somebody that's scary.
well, good. Well, that'll be great.
Yeah,
well,
but there are scary aliens too. Don't get me wrong. They're scary aliens.
I'm sure. I'm sure. But it sounds like the beginning of a Marvel kind of episode. So.
There you go.
There you go. All right. Well, Bruce, I really enjoy speaking with you. Thank you for your time. And I look forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, Robert. Thank you again.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dr. Bruce Olav Solheim. We've been talking about his new book, Timeless Deja Vu, A Paranormal Personal History. Again, you can find out more by visiting his website, BruceOlavSolheim.com. Again, all of his books are available on Amazon.com, and go pick up a copy, and I'm sure you will enjoy it. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me
That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.